With me on the line to discuss this further is André Thomashausen, who is a Professor Emeritus of International Law and former Director of the Institute of Foreign and Comparative Law at UNISA. Professor, thanks so much for joining us on the line. Under the UN Charter, when does a military strike become an illegal use of force? And why does the world keep saying that Israel has violated the UN Charter?
Hi, good afternoon, Paula. Hello, listeners. Yes, unfortunately, there are so many people that will talk about this all the time without ever having bothered to read the UN Charter. That is actually not a complicated document. And the novelty of the UN Charter, the real breakthrough in all international law after World War II, was to stipulate a prohibition of the use of force and the threat of the use of force. So not just the use of force is a violation of the Charter, but the threat of the use of force is a violation. And this is connected to the right of states to defend themselves against the use of force, but also to defend themselves against a threat, a credible threat of a use of force. And this now actually becomes quite clear that Israel can argue that for decades it has been threatened with the use of force by Iran in the most drastic and cruel terms, that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth, that it should disappear from the map, that from the ocean to the river it should not exist. So that threat with the use of force became forever more credible, forever more real, when even the International Atomic Energy Agency said publicly in late May that Iran is weeks, if not days, away from having at its disposal nuclear bombs.
So, Professor, in your legal opinion, Israel is completely within its right to have struck Iran.
It is completely within its right of self-defense against a present and real threat of the use of force against it, and the use of not just any force, but a totally destructive force, a force that would leave no chance for survival for anyone living in Israel. But there is, of course, the principle of proportionality. All international rights may only be used in proportion to the threat, in proportion to the objective that one wants to achieve. Now, there the opinions differ. Some people are second guessing and are saying it would have been enough, for instance, to use smoke grenades or tear gas, and it wouldn't have been necessary to use devastating ammunition. Of course, America saw that the threat to Israel was so real that they used a most complex, a most expensive and difficult, huge operation involving well over 100 aircraft and in-flight tankers to destroy Iran's nuclear weaponry, nuclear production sites. I would tend to say it was proportional, because these weren't bombardments of civilian areas. These weren't attacks designed to destroy civilian life. It wasn't like bombarding a whole city at the end of World War II, of throwing a nuclear bomb on Hiroshima or Nagasaki with hundreds of thousands of victims. No, it was a surgical intervention, was a surgical strike to specifically destroy three nuclear production sites.
Professor, could Israel's actions be considered a violation of Iran's sovereignty under international law?
Well, of course, states are sovereign. That means they are protected against the use of force by other states, against violations of their space, of their air, of their territory. However, this violation can be justified when it is necessary to avert a present and real danger. and that present and real danger, I think no objective observer can deny. Israel was viciously attacked on 7 October. Many, many civilians were very gruesomely killed, and hundreds were taken hostage. And some of those that are surviving are still in captivity. Those hostages are still being held. And whilst the hostages are being held in law, the act of aggression against Israel continues, and Iran has never denied that the Hamas forces were acting with the decisive and overwhelming support of Iran.
When you talk about aggression, how does international law distinguish between targeted military strikes and acts of aggression?
Well, an act of aggression would be an unjustified and unjustifiable use of force against another country. So you could also argue that any use of force is an act of aggression, except where it is justified by legitimate self-defense. And that self-defense, as I'm trying to remind, is permissible also against the threat of the use of force. Mm-hmm. Not just, you don't have to wait until your attacker shoots you before you're allowed to defend yourself. You can defend yourself when the gun is pointed at you and you have good reason to fear that it will be used against you.
Are attacks on nuclear facilities, like Israel has done on Fordo and Natanz, lawful under laws of armed conflict?
I would argue definitely yes. It is unlawful for anyone to possess nuclear weapons outside the regime of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which reserves the right to possess nuclear weapons to the five nuclear weapon states, which happen to be also the five veto powers at the level of the United Nations Security Council. And there's a very good reason that the world decided in 1949 to establish this exclusive regime of nuclear arms. So if Iran attempted to develop nuclear weapons, that in itself is a violation of the NPT, to which Iran is a member, a signatory. And this is why the International Atomic Agency has repeatedly, over so many years, insisted on inspections, insisted that Iran should stop producing nuclear fuel of a kind that can be used as a weapon. Because for civilian use, you don't have to enrich uranium to a very high level. But for a weaponization of uranium, yes, you have to enrich it to about 90%. It's a thing that has to do with the isotopes in uranium, and there's only a very small amount of isotopes with the specific rate of 235 that can be useful for the building of a nuclear bomb. So why would you want to enrich your uranium to contain 90% 235 only if you want to build a nuclear weapon? There's
exactly
No civilian use for that type of enrichment.
And Professor, last question, does the absence of a UN Security Council resolution affect the legality of Israel's actions?
That is another beautifully theoretical legal issue, that yes, in principle, only the United Nations can determine the legality of the use of force. So states should actually theoretically never defend themselves. They should always first go to the United Nations Security Council, appeal to the United Nations Security Council that they should intervene. Such an intervention has only happened once in the Korean War, where the UN Security Council agreed that there should be a United Nations Blue Helmet intervention. In reality, it is virtually impossible for this to happen because the five veto powers in the United Nations Security Council hardly ever agree on these issues. So if Israel had gone to the UN Security Council with a plea that the UN should now free the hostages after October 7th and that the UN should protect Israel from the threats continuously made by Iran, then such a resolution would always have been vetoed by at least Russia, and probably Russia and China together, who are allies of Iran and form a strange a strange group of countries, essentially China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. And I think quite rightly, the United States believes that there's a threat to global peace and security coming from that alliance.